Hello, and welcome to Educational Triage, where we discuss issues in alternative education. This is a discussion about teaching by teachers, for teachers, and others who are interested in the alternative education world. We hope you find today's episode relevant, engaging, and useful. And if you do, please subscribe. I'm Tony Hunt, and I'm here to help guide you with the help of my friends Christy and Philip.
Aloha. Welcome to Educational Triage. I'm Philip Summers, along with Tony Hunt and Christy Goodell. And we're here today to talk about the question, who does alternative ed serve? And when I first thought of this question, I started to spin around in the metaphase. Who should it serve? Why should it serve them? How big a question of socioeconomic status and racial justice? And then I just calmed down for a second because Tony gave me a lot of numbers to look at. And I don't like numbers because it's math and it looks a lot like math. But numbers give us answers, and I like answers because everybody's looking for answers. So sifting through answers, I got to look at some of the things that I sort of didn't want to stereotype about it. There's a lot within the mainstream educational system, the alternative ed systems that they fund. There's a lot of not mainstream kids kind of thing, like there's racial minorities, ethnic minorities. Usually if a minority is something like, 25% of the district, it's more like 35, 38, 40 something percent of the alternative programs kind of thing. There's usually a lower socioeconomic status associated kids who need more of a head start kind of thing. A lot of kids behind in credit, such as that. There's some good programs out there, and there's some simple study halls. They range in all kinds of different ways. I've seen all kinds of different ones. They fly under the radar. Not many people understand them. Tony, help me out on this one. There's more qualities.
The basis of alternative programs is relationships, and there are a lot of students who fall through the cracks. One of my former positions was to catch the kids that were falling through the cracks, and yet there were still kids who fell through the cracks. And even though you try to spread your arms wide, there's some of them who sort of see your fingers and they run around them. And so they don't get into the big bear hug. Let's take a look at what kinds of alternative schools there are. There are private alternative schools that are college prep, where parents who can afford it, and then they can do that. And whether or not they allow lower socioeconomic status students in, I don't know. There are charter schools, which, as we saw, 11.5% of the top 5% were charter schools in the Newsweek article, which made me say, oh, whoa, awesome. we have vocational schools. We have schools that are supposed to be there for behavior modification, which I find absolutely distasteful. We have the charter schools that catch the kids that they really don't want in the mainstream because their test scores aren't high enough and they're struggling students. So they send them down to the alternative programs because they figure that we will be able to work with them and maybe get them to graduate because they really don't want to waste. And I use that term intentionally, their resources on those students. And then we have the students who really want that because there's the lower proportion. There's the greater, lower student-teacher ratio. And you find that with private schools compared to public schools and across the board over the years. And you have that with alternative programs. And I had a colleague tell me the other day, it's so much easier for you to build relationships with your students because you don't have that many students. And we're dealing with 150. And I'm thinking, you know, when I taught in the mainstream, I had a very good relationship with all of my students. And by good relationship, I knew who they were. We could talk to each other. If they needed help, they knew that they could come to me. We'd see each other on the street. They would come flying in. They would work with me. It really didn't matter, but it was more of a community. And I know teachers who are able to do that.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. With large numbers mm-hmm. that can make those connections. But, you know, it's work. It takes a while.
But it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are online schools that work with students that are school phobic or maybe they're ill. So we adjust everything to the student and the needs of the student. But not all programs can be all things, which is a huge mistake that mainstream tends to make. Because they figured that we're not going to be able to deal with this kid for whatever. And so we're just going to toss them over like they would a piece of litter and say, you deal with them now and you figure it out. So,
well, there here's we are. A quick anecdote so to kind we of take feed that perception is I worked for a little while in a school that dealt with kids who had dyslexia. And they started at the third grade because the kids were pretty much identified at the third grade. Hey, you're having some serious problems because basically words don't look like words and letters don't look like letters. So they went to the school and mm-hmm. as they went through the school, it was a sort of traditional sort of setting, class periods and such, but intensive reading training. And by the time they got to the eighth grade, they made a decision whether or not they could go into the ninth grade, say, just in the regular mainstream. And so it was actually a way of catching up and then getting current and then going back into the mainstream, whereas most people think alternative ed is sort of the other way around. You know, you get to a point where in high school, the kids, you know, the smoking kids, they're at the end of the campus, you know, the hoodlums, they go to the alternative ed, mm-hmm. you know, which gives you, which again is, leads to another subject is alternative ed is kind of looked at as the dumping ground in a way. I could never get over that perception at the mainstream when I talked to teachers. I would explain that we had procedures and such, and they kind of looked at me like, "You do?" It's like, "Well, yeah, I told you I can't do certain things." And it wasn't because I didn't want to; it's because I didn't have resources to do them. But and also, you know, there were just certain preconditions. We usually took most people, but most people never understood what we really did. They just kind of like tried to get kids over to right. us, and they dump it on us sometimes, and it was very strange. There was one new curriculum of instruction curriculum instruction, whatever, I can't recall the title, but she walked into the room and she looked around and one of the normal looking teenagers walked by and said hello there, and she goes, oh, and she turned toward my administrator and went, she doesn't look like an alternative ed student. And it's like, why? Because she didn't have like spikes in her bracelets and blue there you hair go. Yeah, it was like, I just went, that's an odd.
Punching someone, like, I'm going to hit you.
Oh, who's she? Get out of here. Spits on her, you know, tries to stab one of us. Oh, yeah, multiple scars.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, what do you think goes on here? It's just, but we know what goes on here. Like you said, it's relationships.
Go ahead, and just Christy, because you have small numbers in a class. I know. Hi. Just because you have small class numbers does not equate to automatically building relationships with your students, right? You can have small numbers and you have to make connections with your students. But you're right with the public perception of who do we serve, our question of today. I think people are surprised that we serve beyond just the behavior kids. Like they think that if you are a behavior kid or you are refusing to work, then you go to alt-ed and that's not who we serve. And I think they're also surprised that we hold kids accountable. We have to, you know, we have graduation rates and we have goals for our programs. I think sometimes they think alt-ed is just a free-for-all. Like we're just going to sing songs and make baskets and then I'm just going to graduate them and they don't have to do any work, right? You know, and that's not what alt-ed is. We hold them to the same academic rigor. We're holding them to graduation standards. We're expecting them to participate. We have attendance expectations, and it's not just for behavior, or it's not just for special ed, or you're supporting the juvenile system, right? or juvenile justice system.
I had a kid take 10 drafts on a paper, like 10 painful drafts. So you kept moving through this paper. By the time it was over with, she was so proud. I was so proud. We're like, I just thought it was awesome. I gave her an A+ and a smile face. And for me, that's insane. But yes, like 10 drafts.
But see, we deal in a society where optics are everything. Mm-hmm. So we have school boards, we have cities that make proclamations, they make statements. We have a Congress that makes statements because it makes them feel good. So look at us, look at the virtue signal that we've just sent out to everybody because we say these things. And there's not even a kernel of corn behind it, you know, that you can flush. It's all just optical. It's completely optical because they don't want to deal with those students. How often has anybody had a school board member who comes in and sits down and actually spends a day in an alternative program or comes in and interviews the teachers and actually asks? I know that our district, they hired somebody from the local university to come in and survey the efficacy of the alternative programs. And when they came in, and they paid them a load of money.
Okay.
And they happened to be married to somebody in admin.
Okay.
The person who did this. And, you know, they did everything right. They had what their purpose and their method, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then what did they do? They interviewed people in the mainstream administration.
Yeah.
They interviewed students in the mainstream. They interviewed parents in the mainstream. And they interviewed teachers in the mainstream. For alternative education.
Uh-huh. Just making sure we're all aware of the connection. Go ahead.
Right. And then they published their findings.
Oh.
And the district was thrilled. And, you know, my supervisor called me and said, I just emailed you something. Did you see it? And I said, I'm looking at it right now and I keep rereading it because I can't believe that. I hope they didn't pay them yet because this is not even half finished. And no, they paid them the full amount. And I was furious. I was furious. And Philip, I think you know about the survey that I'm talking about.
I do indeed, yes.
So this, And so I think that this is where we run into issues, is because people are afraid of alternative ed. They're afraid that they're going to turn up inconvenient truths. They're going to find out that the teachers who go into alternative ed, as untrained as they are, because there really isn't any training. It's majority of alternative ed teachers had to train themselves on the job.
Mm-hmm.
We think outside the box and we're not perfect and we're constantly learning and we're constantly adapting and working on things. But I don't believe people can get away from this lower than attitude or perception of the alternative programs. It's kind of, yes, my child is in special ed. Oh, what's wrong with them?
Yeah.
Well, right. Nothing's really wrong with my kid. My kid is a great kid. They just happen to have a
disability.
They have a disability. That's it.
Which brings up my favorite thing to hate is when someone says, that's retarded. On behalf of my very, very good friend who is Down syndrome, Karen Gaffney, name drop here, who's an ultra swimmer and an amazing person, has her own foundation and an associate's degree from college, saying that's retarded is not good. And it's very, very, and it gets that.
No, that word is offensive to.
It's offensive. So yeah.
It's so awful. Many.
And there's a kind of perception the dumb kids go there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on. Yeah. Anyway, had to drop that little.
Well, there's a definite bias when you say. Right. You know, there's a bias associated with certain programs or groups of people. Right. And so that's part of what we're trying to you know, break down.
Yeah, that yeah, the self-esteem issues.
You know, it that, serves yeah. everybody.
Yeah, there's certain learning disabilities.
Right.
That
and I think we need to look.
It's hard on them, real hard on them, but they'll get over it.
But we're inclusive. Alternative Ed is absolutely inclusive. It's probably more inclusive than mainstream education. When I've been working with different, over the years, working with special ed people, if they're in alternative ed, their job is so simple because we do create the LRE, the least restrictive environment for children to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why students IEP, are so successful.
It's what we do.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the whole part of alt ed is finding alternative ways for you to demonstrate your comprehension, as opposed to it's only going to be this way in my English, math, science, history class, right? I'm going to give this test and you need to be able to pass it. And it's, you know, essay and then, but I have a writing and reading disability. Well, too bad for you. And, you know, as opposed to an alt ed, then there are different ways that I can demonstrate knowledge.
Right.
You know, and that's the other, and the flexibility that you talked about, Tony, about, you know, we're trained on the job, right? Then you figure out with the student, hey, you're not being successful in this way, but I know you know this stuff. You know, can you tell me about it in an oral presentation? Can you create a PowerPoint? Can you do Google Slides? Can you, what else can you do to show me that you understand the comp as opposed to just this one style? And so that's, I think, a critical part to that. Where some people in the mainstream or just the public think that we're going easy on the kid, right? Like, oh, they're not going to write an essay. Like, oh, you're just making it easy. Well, we're not. We're providing opportunities. You just have to switch your head to see it that way.
And they're far more capable than people give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And just because we do our assessments, maybe we do an assessment verbally. Maybe a student demonstrates their knowledge in some other mode that they're far more comfortable with. How do you build confidence in a child? By the time that they're finished with their elementary school years, their mental health has already been established.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken away curiosity, and alternative ed can bring that back.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken away ownership and their participation. We've boxed them into these cubicles, in a sense, where they have to face front. Maybe they're in a circle, but they're stuck in desks and they have to be there. And it's all around the teacher. And I was asked to read the book Culturize, and it really got my goat because it's all about the wondrous and amazing ways of that we should celebrate being administrators. And it had very little to do with students. Students didn't show up until around chapter 10. And then we start talking about project-based learning and some alternative methods, but that's not the thrust of the book. The thrust is not about building relationships. It's very authoritarian. And it's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that if you read Nietzsche, you'll sit there and say, oh, this is a wonderful case study for me of the master-slave relationship. So I think that the kids want to break free from that. And yeah, they're a little rebellious. And what's wrong with that? You talk to any parent. I mean, if I know Philip. Philip was probably quite a rebel in high school.
Well, I resented being evaluated by how I could climb a tree. You know, in alt ed, we don't make the fish climb the tree. If the kid can't do it so well one way, okay, well, we have to work on that skill and we'll work on it and we'll try another way. But I like the way you do this sort of thing too. So I
hope
that sort of, like if they're artists, by all means, if you'd like to do a project involving that, or if you're a writer, I will not hold you back. If you want to write a novel, I might hold you back. But how about a chapter? Let's look at that. You know, I mean, I'm not going to make you climb the tree if you're a fish. You know, I'll let you be free in the ocean.
I'll have you. Right. Why does everybody have to climb a tree? Why can't people swim upstream and show how to do a fish ladder maybe? Right. And if you have troubles with the fish ladder, why can't we do something like a water slide?
Some fish climb cliffs. Fun, that's a weird one, but there's a wine.
There's lots of different ways.
Yeah. Oh.
Whatever suits you. We're all here doing different things. We have multiple intelligences trademarked, yeah. Howard Gardner. There's more than, seven of them?
Definitely.
Yes, there's many, many, many of them.
Eight.
Just ask any human. There's at least
14. Oh, there's tons.
Right.
There's this thing called integral theory.
And my question is, coming up, talking about the differences, why is it that in elementary school and partly in middle school, I don't know how many middle schools do it, but, we have the UDL, Universal Design for Learning, and why are they doing it down there? And it's not poked its little head and begun processing itself in the mainstream secondary schools. Because that would make learning a lot more fun. Why are all of our students so into taking art classes and pottery classes and tactile? Mm-hmm. And they love the science classes where they can get up and they can move around and do things like environmental studies, where they get to play with starfish or whatever,
right.
Or classes where they get to do dissections. And I know a lot of students don't like dissections.
I loved all that dissection and the discovery, and you had to, and that was another big thing about science, right? They didn't tell you, you had to go figure it out. Right. So that curiosity continues.
Well, and you're discovering things. And then incidentally,
you've got a lab partner.
That's the best way to learn. That, incidentally, is the best way to learn. That's it. That's the way to learn. Mm-hmm. You don't do it for hours laboriously poring over data. You go out and you do stuff for intense amounts, like 2-3 intense hours, and then you come back and ruminate for a while and enjoy your time and enjoy your learning experience instead of pounding in one ear or out the other, that sort of thing, yeah. Chrissy's talking about it, and she's very enthused.
And data information is only as good. Well, data and information is only as good as long as you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not using it, you're going to lose it.
Absolutely.
Use it or lose it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. And you do it so well if you use it and then reuse it and make it yours and then turn it over and... It's thinking all the way around. It's not getting a good grade.
Yeah.
It stays.
And so that kind of goes back to the original topic, like who do we serve? We're serving students who, and their families, who realize that those learning styles, all the ones that we're talking about, are available in these alt-ed programs. And so therefore, that's where I'm going. And I think another thing is, kind of with the small numbers, is that we are able to communicate with our families, the student support system that you definitely need to have. That is a definite benefit. It's extremely difficult for me to communicate with my, I have 5 classes of 30, right? It's extremely difficult to maintain that communication with families in a meaningful way. That's not just like, I'm going to do a mass email, blitz, right? So absolutely, that is a benefit in alt-ed, that we can communicate and support our families and our communities much better, right?
I think it's also germane to that topic that alternative ed families, students who end up in a lot of the alternative eds, I'm not going to say all alternative eds, because as I said, there are college prep, there are a number of different ones.
There are, correct.
Those that are for the disenfranchised students, I'm going to say, or the students who just don't fit into the mainstream, it may be the first time that a lot of these families have had a positive interaction with the schools. And so it opens those doors as well. And try as they might try to spin things with families at the mainstream, the students actually tend to lock in and they just fly through and they find their balance. They find their soul in many ways in the alternative programs. There's some that still don't. And then it's the alternative programs are the ones that are matched with other outside resources so they can help find those. But, you know, it's really kind of interesting that mainstream hears about something that maybe somebody in alternative ed has done, and all of a sudden they want everybody to participate and do it, right, which takes it all away. I'm thinking to these postcards that we had to send to our students the other day, which kind of, yeah, I think it's kind of nice, but I was sending thank you cards to my students once a quarter and thanking them for certain qualities or certain mm-hmm. things that they had done. And they really loved getting those because they were personal to them and they yep. took time for me to write them. And these were just like scribbling a couple of sentences and signing it and sending it off. So it really wasn't heartfelt. And I think that they'll be able to see that because you need to be authentic. And I don't know how, I do believe that a lot of teachers were very authentic with these.
Yeah. But it's nice that hopefully a lot, kind of those don't want to fall through the cracks. I'm using my little air quotes, right? But we mm-hmm. want to, there are a lot, you're absolutely right. We have a lot of students who the only time they hear from teachers and or the school is because they, something punitive, right? Here's something that you are not doing well and we need to contact home. Or we're super concerned, right? Like, we're really worried you're not showing up, or we're seeing these concerns are coming up, and it's rare. And I'm probably guilty of that too, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. super hard to be like, I really need to call Philip and Tony and tell them what a good job they're doing. That's hard for a lot right. of teachers to do. So you're right. I think Tony, you and I talked about this, that when we were doing hybrid, I was sending notes home, and then we send a whole bunch of prizes home in the mail. So because mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm trying to build relationships. You're probably not getting anything since you're stuck at home. And so we were doing that last year too. And the kids mentioned it. They really responded to it. Oh my gosh, thanks so much. And it wasn't like I was sending home like Starbucks gift cards, right? Like, it was just, here's some candy and like a thank you note, pink, and I sent it home so they can have something, right? But, yeah. And so those little touches are meaningful. But you're right, because it's working, now we're going to replicate it across the settings.
Yeah, which diminishes its efficacy.
It makes it a little
and the impact.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but when it's authentic, yeah. those parents give you the most amazing food back. Some of the best tamales, handmade tamales. And there was, there was this one family from Tonga, and she made this chicken and rice, and it was to die for. And then they married this other family who was in the alternative ed program, and they were wonderful folks. So there's this sort of legacy that occurs too. We had three daughters from one family, and uh-huh. one son and one daughter from another. And it was kind of like a family. Yeah, so it goes both ways, you know. And it came from those conferences and, you know, talking to him and being authentic with him, like Tony had said too. Really, if you're authentic and you're really involved in their life and, you know, the kid's life, and there's a little triangle going and the kid feels that, it's a really wonderful thing. It's the way it should be. Mm-hmm.
And students like it when you notice. I met a student yesterday who the mom said that they were not going to speak because they had super high anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I had read through the application and I thought, ha, a spitfire. And I looked at the student and I said, after a few responses, I looked at the student and I said, you know, you should really do stand up. Bam. That just broke the ice. It made all the difference. It really warmed up the atmosphere. But you need to be able to see through everything. And I think alternative ed doesn't just serve the parents. Because it really does. Because we have a lot of first-time graduates for the families.
Yes.
It doesn't just serve the students. It serves the community because it helps. Because if the programs are able to develop partnerships with different agencies, because if they're doing community service work, that helps. And that brings about good mojo between the community and the program. If they have, if they're doing anything with a business, that helps develop as well. So, you know, the impact is high. And no, they can't compete with the mainstream where they have all the big bucks and they throw pennies over to the alternatives programs and they say, you know what? I know you've got these kids, but if you need anything, well, you know, here's about $100 a year per kid. So, you know, figure it out. And I remember when I had $400 to run my program. And by November, middle of November, I was plumb out of money. And I was asked, what did you do with it all? Right. Well, we had to buy paper. We had to buy pen. I mean, you know, supplies. We had to buy supplies for all the kids. And we got a couple of these things. And they said, oh, okay, I suppose. How about another $150? And I said, no. But what
I learned from that. You turned the money down? You turned it down?
No, I demanded more and I got more.
Okay.
I developed relationships with people in the administration and the superintendent. So that really helped. And also with the school board. So, and I did that through open houses that I would have 3 times a year where the kids ran the open house.
Nice.
And I would hide in the office because I was terrified that it was going to be just disastrous. And then it was incredible. They were just fantastic.
You got Costco.
Because you got ownership of it, right?
You can never lose with Costco.
What's that?
Cake. You got Costco cake, as I recall, right?
Costco cake.
Oh, it just enticed everyone. You
yeah, we some would Costco have those. Cake,
go to the open house. Oh, yeah. That was good for at least 20 people, I recall. Oh,
and
yeah.
Punch.
Oh, the punch was, it was free.
But your kids, you know, I think that's great that you had the kids a part of it, right? As opposed to you and your other teachers. Okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to do blah, blah, blah. And then, right?
It was all
them.
You got
kids
all
have ownership in it. And of course, they're going to try to,
They wore suits, all of them. Some of them. They wore ties.
And they were there and they were dressed up.
Oh yeah, it was all them.
Yeah,
they took
and so
us
when
to the
I
exhibit.
Taught them music,
here's what we did. Here's yeah, it's great. Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
And they would have little music concerts when I taught music. On a side note, I remember when we were doing anatomy and physiology.
Oh my, where did that go?
Well, I remember that they asked me. They said, "Can we do these certain body parts?" I said, don't think so.
No. Sorry.
But
God.
They kept it all appropriate. But the thing is that once I did that, then I had developed that relationship with the board members and the superintendent and associate superintendent. And we were able to start getting better funding and people were actually watching out for us.
Because of relationships.
Exactly. So, but I know that we have board members who say that they're fascinated and they really want to come in and they really want to be a part of everything. And, you know, crickets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the superintendent, absolute crickets. They're not really all that interested. They say they are, they'll throw money at it and then they will accept mediocrity, I think.
Or worse yet, I think they don't have any idea of what alternative ed is. And so the idea of what alternative ed is becomes not what it is, for example. I know that a lot of programs are springing up around the computer, and I've done a lot of online work. And I wasn't impressed with online work. As much as we had a large volume of kids, I had 70-some kids, I think, or 45 kids at one time. So we had 120-some kids, 3 teachers. And that was a lot of volume for online. But I just didn't feel comfortable with online. I didn't think it was first off, the relationships weren't there. So, hey, there goes what we've been speaking of the last 35 minutes. And so then the content wasn't mine ever anyway. And then I'm learning or really I'm thinking, what are they learning? And it's all pat. I mean, I took the courses. It's pretty standard stuff, but I don't know. I mean, there's just no flexibility. There's no pizzazz. There's no nuance. It's not good. And if you think that's alternative,
it's passive.
It's very passive. It's very lower level learning. I got real good at passing their tests because
I understood what they were telling me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you read at grade level. Because if you don't,
Well, there was a lecture, and what? Someone thought it was me because we were both bald. And I was insulted because that guy was boring, you know. And if you've ever been around one of my lectures. And then I realized no one had been around one of my lectures. And then I thought to myself, well, I'm a teacher, and all I've been is just an administrator of people's grades and how they've been doing in this course. And then I thought to myself, check, please. I got to get out of here. This is not my style of teaching at all. And they tried to make it interactive.
But
it did not ever work.
Well, online and computerized teaching is very passive. And I, for one, have a terrible time with that. I just can't do it because it's like I have to watch this TV show that's going to tell me something, and I have to find a way to be interested in it, but I'm already ahead of them on the game. And it's like, okay, fine, come on. Why don't you give me a pretest, and then I'll look for what it is that I need, and then I can take a test. Mm-hmm. Don't make me sit through all of this, you know? And it's with the online trainings that we have to do for your, what's that card that you get if you do all the safety trainings? You know what I'm talking about?
Like a first aid card all those health protocols that we have
right.
to do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
You can forget everything and when an emergency happens.
I understand the need for them, and I understand the need for having it online. But for a kid to have to sit through 6 hours of that every single day, and when they say that all the alternative programs must be on computerized learning, guess what? You're taking our most fragile students, and you're throwing them into the lion's den. And we have an increasing number of students who want to drop out, and we've been working hard on lessening that.
Mm-hmm.
The world is not getting better as far as a lot of students and their perceptions and where they find themselves. We keep telling students that they have to go to college, and a lot of our students, they're thinking, no, I kind of want to leave school now. Don't tell me I need to go to college. Uh-huh. So we're kind of developing an elitism of students who can afford it and students who want to go there. We still need people who are going to be doing the honorable jobs, you know, janitors. We need people who are going to be able to do and custodial work. We need people who are going to be sales representatives. We need mm-hmm. people. I mean, there's a ton of things that people don't need a college education for. We still need those. And to tell them that if they go into factory workers, all kinds of levels.
Well, the future.
Let's say that I went into a factory, and when I'm 27, I realize that I want to go to college and get a better job. I should be able to do that, and they'll pay me for it because a good company will want to, they'll want to have a workforce that grows mm-hmm. and works with them and has longevity and loyalty. What were you going to say, Philip? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that the jobs that are going to exist in the next 20 years, we don't even know what they are yet. They haven't been created. I mean, if you look at how fast things are changing right. and the things that have changed, it's exponential, that rate. We're creating the future as we get up in the morning and go to bed at night. And so to say that college is the way mm-hmm. to the future is really limiting the future. I know a lot of students that have created businesses, and they're very successful, more successful than if they'd ever gone to college, and they're doing what they like to do. And that's the way of the future too. It's also been stated that we change careers something like 3-4 times. I heard 5, but I'm still in denial of that one. If I had to do it every 10 years, I think I'd be exhausted. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, when you break it down like that, that's kind of a weird time frame. But
definitely.
You're right. There's so many careers, right? Not just a job, but like a career that does not require a college degree and will pay the same, if not more, than a lot of degrees, right? Like, I mean, all the, like, there's so many of the, I just use the big broad term of, you know, trades and those apprenticeships. And I think we talked about in our last episode, you know, the electricians, the contractors, the construction, HVAC, electrical. There's, I mean, the community colleges, plumbing, oh my gosh, right? Like those are, and actually I was doing this internship and they said one of the number one jobs that, like, job security forever, and it pays astronomical, is elevator repair. Because think of all the huge buildings that we have. They all have elevators. They all need to be maintained. Mm-hmm. And they just can't find people. And so that job, right? I mean, but you don't grow up when you're little and be like, I'm going to be a firefighter. I'm going to repair elevators. But that's job security right there. Yeah, we need them. You certainly recognize it when you don't have a working elevator.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that just connects to this, all the ADA, you have to have a working elevator for compliance. And so it's just those kind of fields are huge and the demand is growing.
And we have a lot of, and there are a number of PTEC schools that are around the country. But we have one that's probably about in the neighboring district. That's about 30 miles away. But, I'm thinking that if we could connect more with the community college to come in and partner with the high schools to work with them to do more of that,
yes,
within a district, and have like a hub in every single district where they could teach the welding, where they could teach a lot of these other different kinds of skills, we would be much further ahead. And the skilled labor shortage might be a little less of a shortage, and there might actually be more interest.
Yeah, I do agree there is a deficiency in that area. That bridge, I don't think, is as advertised or broadcast or publicized as much. I just don't think students in high school are aware of all the different opportunities there are, because unless they either go search it out or they have like one of us who's like banging on the door telling them. But it's not as publicized as like go to college. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. So that is an area that needs to be worked on for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely. And I think that with that, we need to wrap up, and we will say that, who does alternative ed serve? It serves students, it serves the community, and it has the potential of making a far greater impact than just the rah-rah stadium noise from the mainstream high school that people like to go to, even though that is an important social aspect. So until we meet again, I will say adieu.
Goodbye.